Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code WBZMass and receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions.
21 years of age or older to wager. Massachusetts only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Play it smart from the start with GameSense. GameSenseMA.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-327-5050 or visit GamblingHelplineMA.org in partnership with MGM Springfield.
B-Pod Studios.
Now. Sports talk. While you're on the clock, this is Zulak and Bertrand.
The sports show radio host.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Fourth and final hour, Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5 The Sports Hub. We've got calls on the board. Also want to talk about the NFL schedule for a moment, following up on Eric's call. As he said, you know, his most important games in his mind are the conference games, which is a good point. A win against the Broncos could mean more than a win against the Seattle Seahawks.
That's fair.
No, he's right about that. Yeah. Yes. And so I fully understand what it is that he is saying, and I also think that in a season like this one, with the possibility of starts and stops or postponements, that maybe it's more important than ever before to make sure you take care of business in your division, take care of business in your conference games. Mike Florio had this over the weekend as well, by the way. He says, the placement of so many great games in week one of the NFL schedule suggests that the league is determined to play week one. As one source with knowledge of the situation explained to Pro Football Talk, the league is definitely committed to and focused on executing the first weekend of the regular season. He says, similarly, the next 2 weeks after week two contain the kind of flexibility that would allow the league to regroup after week one and, if necessary, press pause. The teams that play in week two all have byes in the same weekend, allowing each game to be postponed to a week when the teams otherwise would be off. Week three has no division games. Week four has no division games. If necessary, those weeks could be postponed until after week 17 or could be scrapped altogether, though. By week five, however, the division games resume and lost games would have a greater competitive impact. He notes that a source pointed out to him, look at how the schedule is structured. We are going to play football week one, but if we figure out that it was too soon or it was a bad time,
right,
they can scrap weeks two, three, and four.
See, when you heard Miami was the home opener, you're like, oh, man, they are going forward with this. They are playing, and they're planning to play. Like, we talked about how you can throw all that West Coast trip, those games against Seattle, the Rams, San Diego, all into that first month where – okay, if you want to scrap that first month, then you're going to eliminate some of those tough trips, right? Kansas City, we thought, could be in there. But, yeah, I mean, you go out, you find out what you have, see how the league reacts, see how fans react, and then if you need to make major adjustments, you do it. But there does come a point where the season's got to be on go, you know, and you can't do this throughout the whole schedule. Like you just said, weeks 5, 6, 7, 8, you should be ramping up to really – say, okay, we're attacking this thing. We're moving forward with it, regardless.
So the ability to tit pause for the NFL does seem sort of interesting that they scheduled it like that. Or I thought of it this way, too. What if they say, you know what, by September 13th, I think is the opening date.
Yeah.
We're just not ready yet. We need a couple more weeks. When they pick things up, they can pick things up with the week one schedule, and they could sort of move those other 3 weeks around, which I know Florio hit on. He's hitting on them as if you play week one and then you don't play 2, 3, 4. But what if you say, hey, you know what, by September, you know, 2 weeks after that, what would have been week three, now we're ready to go. Well, you can play week one and then pick it up with week four, and then move seasons two and three to the back end, right?
Right.
You have the ability to shift those weeks around, move
weeks
them.
Two and three to the back end.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I probably said that incorrect.
So Labor Day falls pretty late this year, correct?
It does.
It's the latest it could be. Okay.
Yeah.
7th? Okay. I'm just trying to look at the dates of September here. Yeah, I mean, they've done enough to where they can delay the start of this if it needs to be.
Well, they can start, but they've got wiggle room. They've got wiggle room in the first three,
and
4 weeks.
Is the preseason a real thing, you know? That's another thing. Is the preseason a real thing?
No.
Yeah.
And if talk about an unintended benefit.
If, you see what I'm saying? You're going to blow it all in a preseason.
Things weren't quite right. Ready to ramp up here at the end of July, beginning of August. Oh, had to lop off a couple of preseason games. Oh, that would be horrific. How would we deal without those preseason games? But yeah, I think more importantly, they've got some flexibility built in. Number one, due to the later than usual start. Number two, just with the way things are scheduled in the first several weeks, to where, all right, if we need to, I understand the need to have that wiggle room built in there, but that really is the second worst case scenario. The first being they're not able to play, and it turns out it's not safe to even get these teams together for practice, much less games, even in empty stadiums. The second worst case scenario is they get started and then have to stop.
Because go ahead, Artie.
Yeah, well, because we see what happens. You know, once you start something and then have to stop, it ends up being stopped for a lot longer than any of us would like.
Pete in Delaware has been hanging on. He's got a thought on the Jordan documentary. Hi, Pete.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up?
Hey, so yesterday, I was watching the talking about old games. I watched ESPN had Len Bias versus Michael Jordan in 83. Oh, yeah. And as a Celtics fan, oh, my God. That has got to be one of the most depressing sports days of my life when he passed. But that guy, I still say, not because he was a Celtic, but just because I watched him, he would have been, in my opinion, better than Jordan. And he was LeBron James with a jump shot. And if you ever go watch, I don't know how much you watched of him, Zoe, he had a natural shot. Everything of him was natural.
Baseline was unbelievable. His baseline game was unreal. I saw a lot of his games being recruited.
Yeah, right. And he could defend. He could do everything. And if he got on that Celtic team with Bird and McHale, you can forget the Bad Boys. I mean, the Celtics would have won a couple more titles. And him and Jordan, it wouldn't have been the Last Dance. It would have been, you would not have this document, in my opinion. I just think they would have gone back and forth. It was the next Magic and Bird, and we never got to see it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I would not equate him to Jordan. I mean,
I wouldn't either.
When did Michael come out of Carolina? 83, right?
83 or 84.
84. Because I went into Maryland in 86. That's when Lenny came out.
Bias was 86. Jordan was 84.
So Michael already had, what, an MVP in his pocket? When he second year he won MVP?
He won MVP.
Go back to the documentary. I think it was second or third year.
Just watch that. God.
Yeah, second year.
Is that his first one? His second year?
Yeah. So, I mean, he was well on
his way. No, his first MVP was 88.
Oh, wow. What happened his second year?
I don't know.
There's something early in his career.
No, 88 was the first one. 617-779-0985. Joe Rogan's taking a bunch of crap for doing an interview after a UFC event over the weekend. We'll get to that. And also, MLB's results on their antibody tests are back. We'll touch on both of those next.
Now it's time for more of Zolak and Bertrand.
That's what you put in your mouth in the morning.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Joe, all week the understanding was that you would do interviews from an isolated area, or the fighters would be given sanitized headsets and you'd do them remotely. You did them in the ring. Explain that decision.
Well, it didn't make any sense to me if everybody's been tested and everybody's clean. No one has the disease. I've been tested. They've been tested. I want to see them. When I'm doing an interview with a fighter after a spectacular performance like Justin Gaethje's fight, I want to look at him in the eye. I don't want it to be some impersonal thing where he's 100 feet away from me.
We'll be right back.
lot of people were surprised over the weekend when the UFC 249, Joe Rogan, conducted a post-fight interview right in the octagon. There he was, in there, touching, up close and personal, doing an interview. And so people were questioning that when they saw it, wondering why that needed to be the case. People also, you know, were giving their two cents on social media. But I don't know if everyone realized everybody there had been tested.
Yeah, there's no fans. This is a controlled environment.
Yeah.
They're doing their thing. He's their guy. What's the issue? He wants to do it. They're not forcing him. Gun to the head. Hey, get in his face. You're going to interview him, interview him. We tested you. You're clear. They're clean. Now, one guy tested positive. He got pulled before the start. But a lot of people were watching the other night. A lot of people. A lot of athletes, too. All over Twitter. All over social media. See how much they love the UFC. When do they love the UFC this much?
Well, they love the UFC, but they love having live sporting events.
That's
and they love
what it
having
is.
They love having someone serve as, you know, the first back. Okay, how's this look? How's this going to work? Yeah, I've seen a little bit with wrestling, and you know, we're gonna see some charity golf matches here starting this weekend. But you know, really for an actual event that normally would be played in front of a whole bunch of people or contested in front of a whole bunch of people, how's it gonna look? How's it gonna work? And that's why I think people are watching as much as they did.
Yeah.
Not for any particular love of the card that the UFC put together or anything else. Just an idea of, okay, well, what could this mean for us?
So in an interview on the broadcast, he was asked about this, doing the post-game, post-match interview, and he said he threw a fit because UFC didn't want him to do it. UFC said, no, we got to do it from a distance, and he protested to the point where he got his way and was allowed to do the interview in the octagon. But the thing is, I mean, they've got the benefit of testing. Everyone there has been tested. They're all clean. They don't have it. So I don't know if people realize that or not, because it seems like if everyone there is tested and they've been recently all tested and they have been sort of in that controlled bubble of people, well, then it's all good.
Yeah. I don't know why people have an issue with it.
Antibody testing results are back in Major League Baseball, and not everyone who participated in the test returned their results, Hardy.
I know, like thousands didn't return their results.
It's odd.
I don't understand that. Why would they freaking test?
So all but four teams agreed to participate in this. So they had 28 teams who said yes. And of those 28 teams, they had some 10,000 people, players, managers, staff members, you know, the stadium workers, whatever, all employed by Major League Baseball teams. Okay, we're going to send out 10,000 of these antibody tests, and it's a simple test. It's, you know, it's a finger prick. And then you send whatever blood sample back and I think they did actually the results themselves, like in home, but then they had to send everything back to them so they could compile all the data and learn as much as they could from it. But less than 6,000 people actually.
Yeah, 5,600 are the number of people in the test.
Yeah.
Here's the question I have, and I don't know the particulars of it. Were you able to see your result on the test kit that they sent?
I believe so. I believe that was part of the test.
Oh, they screwed that up because they screwed that up royally. If I needed to send you the test back to get my results, guess what? You were getting your test back. If I get to prick my finger and take a test that says, oh, you're negative, throw in the garbage. Like, great, good news. I'm done. And so, you know, it just makes me wonder, like, okay, what if it were positive? Well, now I'm freaking out. I got to get to the doctor. I don't care about sending back the test. It says I may have had the antibodies. You know, I got to make sure I'm good. Can I start calling my doctor?
Oh my God, I've been everywhere.
I don't have any symptoms. Do I need to tell anyone near me? Like, you know, then you just lose track of it. So I don't know. I would assume more it's people testing negative and not caring to send it back.
Yeah. 26 of the 30 teams, 10,000 test kits. Because of stay-at-home orders, and I'm reading from the article that Passan put up.
Right.
Because of the logistics of it, 5,754 of the tests in which participants used a pinprick to draw blood and received almost immediate results were completed. A total of 5,603 completed the test and filled out a survey that accompanied it.
Well, still a good-sized sample. Yeah. Let's not take that away from it. It's 5,600 people from all around the country. I mean, it's still a good sample size. It's not 10,000, but it's, you know, it's decent.
And it, and we thought this was going to be a really good cross-section. It didn't end up being as good as I thought it was going to be, and I think when we talked about it. So of the test population, 60% were men, 80% were white, and there was a this is the quote, a socioeconomic gradient where poorer populations are facing COVID infections at higher rates. And they were talking about, well, you know, these people did, quote unquote, have jobs, and some of them were, you know, were very highly paid jobs. So maybe it wasn't the best cross section that or as good a cross section as we thought it was going to be. But it's still a lot of people, and it's still very, very few of them ended up testing positive for this. So they also did the breakdown of the people who had the antibodies. So there were only 60 of them. Among those with the antibodies in the MLB study, in the 2 weeks prior to the test, how many do you think had a fever? 2 weeks leading up to, and again, 60 people test positive.
Wait, you have the number 60? I thought it was 39.
60 people tested positive was the number that I had.
Oh, I saw 39 was the number. Maybe it's...
Well, these are percentages here. So among those with the COVID-19 antibodies in the MLB study, 2 weeks prior to the test, how many had a fever? Just take a percentage guess.
4.
2.7.
Oh, God.
How many had a headache?
Is it Hardy? Has that not been my point?
Of the people who tested positive, what percentage had a headache in 2 weeks leading up to the test?
50.
14.
I was going to say 10.
No, 14 of 60?
14%. Yes.
Oh, 14%. Okay.
So less.
Wow.
Oh, man.
What have I said about the temperature checks, Hardy?
And garbage?
I said
useless.
You might be able to catch some people and say, hey, do you know you have a temperature? Oh, no, I didn't realize it. Well, you do. You're sick.
I'm walking around. I got 102. That's amazing. You know, I feel great.
What if it's not 102? What if it's 100.7?
Still feel 100.8. Like crap. Still feel like crap.
Either way, you might catch someone that way, but there are plenty of people that have had this that didn't present with a fever until weeks into it. You know what I mean? Like, there were weeks where they did not have a fever before the symptoms got worse for them, and then they spiked the fever. Like, that to me is a waste of time. Like, yeah, you'll catch the most obvious cases with the temperature checks, but right, for the most part, you'll be wasting your time.
Right.
The other thing to consider in this too, and this is all, these are all things that we still need to find out. This all falls into the category of need more data. This is only in the 2 weeks prior to the test. How long do you test positive for COVID-19 antibodies once you've been exposed or,
well, they don't know. Presumably
infected with COVID-19? Right. So, I mean, but is it 2 weeks? Is it 2 months? Is it 2 years? How long is it? So maybe less than 3% had a fever, but we're only talking about the 2 weeks leading up to the test. Did they have a fever 3 weeks out, a month out? Would they still test positive that far out? I mean, everyone's trying to
figure this out. Could they test positive for antibodies before they had suffered the worst symptoms? Is that possible? Hey, you just tested positive for the antibodies. You know why? Because you've been carrying it for 2 weeks, and you're about to get really sick.
Right.
Yeah, I was reading something that, like, average time from getting it to being in the hospital is like 2 weeks. And I thought, like, wow, what do those 2 weeks look like before it gets a lot worse, if you will? And much of that time you have no idea you have it.
Well, yeah, what is it, day 8, 9, 10? We say, oh, crap, I really feel like dog bleep. I got to go get a test. And meanwhile, for those 9 days, you were hanging around people or ran into people.
I don't know. Sort of it's the deadliest part of this is that it disguises itself. It's stealthy. It's a stealthy virus is what it is. You guys see this story from Gary Myers that popped up here in the last little bit?
What is it?
No.
I put it in Slack if you want to see it. Gary Myers had this tweet last hour. Hard to present in order of why Tom Brady didn't want to return to the Patriots. But one thing has been very much overlooked, according to an excellent source. Well, Gary, I hope you wouldn't report it unless you thought your sources were excellent. But he says his deteriorating relationship with offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels. Ooh. Tom was worn out by Josh after all these years.
Ooh.
That surprised me, says Gary Myers. They made it seem like they were brothers, you know, fighting after some sideline blowups. Worse than that, Brady also wanted more input into the game plan. Also, he knew it was his final season in New England and said when he didn't trust the wide receivers, didn't throw to them. Bad look. Pats lacked reliable wide receivers other than Edelman.
I thought there was a Bleacher Report middle of March that said the same thing about McDaniels. Deteriorating relationship. Somewhere around March 11th, 12th, 13th in there. This isn't old news. We brought this up.
Yeah, but this is Gary Myers. I mean, this is someone who's a better reporter.
Josh's name, right? Like, Josh's name has been kept out of everything. Like, nobody talked about Josh. We even talked about it on our show.
Do you believe it?
I don't, because Josh does not pick the talent.
I buy it.
Josh didn't bring in the tight ends. Josh didn't say fullback get hurt. Josh didn't say center get hurt. Josh didn't say give me these two tight ends, Lacoste and Izzo. Oh, yeah. You know, I think it's a great idea to get Ben Watson out of retirement.
I think something deteriorated after the filming of Tom versus Time. I think that's an important timeline to provide. Something went south there after we saw them together as friendly and as close as they were in Tom versus Time. Something went south after that point.
And that was the time when Tom probably knew, well, he's going to take the indie job, right?
Maybe.
I'm going to join my time here with Josh at the end because he's going for a head gig, and I'm not going to have him. So if he didn't like Josh or started to deteriorate around then, maybe he's happy he was leaving. And then he came back. You're like, oh, here we go. I've never heard him talk ill of Josh.
We've got thoughts on this. If you got thoughts, bring them to the table. 617-779-0985. Do we track down that Tangway audio yet?
I hope not.
Yeah, we have it.
It looks disturbing. Yeah, I mean, I don't. We got to do it.
Can we get into it next? Is that okay?
It's such a train wreck. We have to do it.
All right, it's coming.
Because I think this is going to be a series.
Okay.
Yes.
Miss something?
You got to wear your lucky jersey. Don't wash the lucky socks.
Rub your ball 16 times. Yeah.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's home for sports.
Zolak and Bertrand at 137. You may have seen the news over the weekend or last week that the last surviving original member of the 1943 Rockford Peaches, Mary Pratt, passed away. 101 years old, Hardy, from the great city of Quincy, the most patriotic city in America. Pitched 5 years in the league. North Quincy High School, class of 36, Mary Pratt. Yeah, you were saying?
Now, this isn't Betty Spaghetti that we're talking about here.
No.
This isn't all the way May.
No. Nope.
Okay. This is Mary Pratt. Okay.
Yeah, Mary Pratt. Okay. You know.
This isn't Marla Hooch.
Big deal locally, you know?
Okay. Not Marla Hooch.
Not Marla Hooch. No. Okay. Those were all like composite, for the most part, composite characters, you know.
Who Madonna played?
I don't know. I think that's pretty
Marla Hooch wasn't
that's
a real
pretty
story.
Historically accurate film.
I don't know that it is. I don't know that A League of Their Own is all that historically accurate. But you were saying so? What'd you say?
Who did Madonna play in the movie?
I don't recall.
That was she was All the Way May.
Oh, right. Okay.
And she'd go all the way.
I know we're all reaching for content here, okay?
And Doris was played by Rosie O'Donnell. That was Doris, who gets yelled at in the scene that we're about to play, which is, you know, there's no crying in baseball. Jimmy Dugan, the manager, there's no crying in baseball, Evelyn.
That's not Rosie O'Donnell getting yelled at.
If anybody had to
She gets yelled at to shut up, Doris.
Oh,
she's in
yes.
the dugout. She starts chirping him, and he tells her to be quiet.
Okay, all right.
She's not the outfielder getting yelled at.
No.
But you're saying so.
I mean, if you had to pick anybody to play Rosie O'Donnell or like a Roseanne Barr, I would pick Tangway out of the whole cast of characters over there.
So you think that
he's got the jowls.
Okay, so what happens is
Nathan Lane.
This is great because again we're a little thin on content these days. I think we've done a pretty good job. I think we've done a good job. I mean, I'm not trying to brag. I'm just saying I think we've managed. You know,
are any of them back in studio? By the way,
appreciate everyone that's hanging with us. Everyone that's been with us during this time, appreciate you being here. But Tangway and Company over there at NBC Sports Boston have started recreating classic sports movie scenes, and this is the first one they've done, which is the scene of No Crying in Baseball, with Evelyn being played by Gary, DJ Bean playing manager Jimmy, and Trenny with a small, brief role cameo as Doris.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's hear it.
Say, Evelyn, can I ask you a question? You got a moment?
Mm-hmm.
Which team do you play for?
Well, I'm a peach.
Well, I was just wondering, because I couldn't figure out why you would throw home when we have a two-run lead. You let the tying run get on second, and we lost the lead because of you. Now you start using your head. That's that lump that's 3 feet above your ass. Are you crying? Are you crying?
No, no.
Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Why don't you leave her alone, Jimmy?
Oh, you zip it, Doris. Rogers Hornsby was my manager, and he called me a talking pile of pig. And that was when my parents drove all the way down from Michigan to see me play the game. And did I cry?
No.
No, no. And you know why? Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
I have a question. Why does DJ Bean have 6 air conditioner units outside?
Maybe he lives in a 6 family. I don't know. I can't
because it's like a condo complex or something. I'm guessing. I don't know.
This is a one time thing, right?
I don't know. It was better than I thought.
I don't know. It's not. You're right. It's not totally horrible.
I kind of enjoyed it.
Well, Gary's done a little vaudeville in his day. I mean,
some summer stuff.
He does. He likes the screen. He wants to be a screenwriter. He was in the Chappaquiddick movie, Chappie.
He was in Knives Out. He was in.
What's Knives Out?
A movie that you would have zero tolerance for.
Thank you.
It's a murder mystery. It's a bit of a caper. From what I haven't seen it yet myself.
Like Cape Fear.
I hear it's really good. Yeah, it's like Cape Fear. Yep.
Nice.
There's a big houseboat. Yep.
Oh. Just like Cape Fear.
Mm-hmm.
Max. Yeah. Gary Tangway does have an IMDb page, by the way.
Yeah, he's legit.
It's quite the photo that they have on here. It says Gary Tangway is an actor known for Knives Out, Gone Baby Gone, and Chappaquiddick.
Wait a minute, he was in Gone Baby Gone?
I've seen Gone Baby Gone 3 times minimum. I don't remember Gary Tangway in it.
Did he play a newsy type of guy? He always plays the news anchor role. Did he play
maybe
fake?
It's just his voice.
I've seen that a lot. I've seen that movie a lot. I don't remember Gary being in that.
Was Tangway in the credits? That's what we need to find out. Hold on.
I'm looking right now, too. Full cast.
Yep.
Look, scroll way to the bottom.
Expand. Newscaster. He was. He was a newscaster in Gone Baby Gone. Oh. One of 7 different people that played a newscaster in the course of the movie.
Yeah.
So that's that's according to IMDb what he's known for.
Okay.
I would also maybe want to add, you know, these new shorts that NBC Sports Boston is putting out.
You know what? They're you know, like when Pixar first started to come on the scene, they have all these little short films and clips, you know, the ptoom, 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 where the lamp jumps across the thing. And then they have like this little wind up toy and he does his little, it's a little short film. This is what this reminds me of. Like, actors trying to get in, it goes really bad. But let's take a look at their audition tape.
Let's see your reel. Your demo reel. Yeah.
All you have to do is look at Gary the way he's wearing a hat on his head.
Well, this is, by the way, DJ texted me.
Actor.
DJ texted me. Wait until you see Tomorrow's. And
right,
there was
some
expletives in there that I cannot relay, but yep.
They can swear.
He said, wait until you see tomorrow's. Tomorrow, he's already teasing tomorrow's. I want to know the movie, though.
I appreciate the casting choices. They're not taking the easy way out. It would have been easier to have Gary play Jimmy Dugan, right? And it would have been easier to have, you know, Trenny do the role of one of the women on the team. But they're going against convention on this. Now, having said that, I think we need to start casting some NBC sports personalities in our own
Ooh,
sports
I like this.
Movie scenes. And
I like
but
that.
Again, let's go against convention in terms of the casting, right?
I want to do Beetlejuice. And I want to have all their characters play characters.
It's not a sports movie,
not
though.
Not a sports movie. Is it well,
but thanks,
the football,
thanks for playing.
The dead football team at the end. The dead football team at the end does come in and help.
Shake, Sinatra. Come on.
Kind of. How about this? Who would you cast as Rudy in the scene where he stands up on the stool in the Notre Dame locker room and gives the Newt Rockne speech? We're going to go. They can't lick us.
No, Kern would nail it.
I'm thinking like Tommy. You know, let's get Tommy Heinsohn.
Tommy, I can't get up on this stool with my bad back. I told you people about this.
You got to go way against, you know, forget about who looks like Rudy. Forget about who, you know, embodies that same youthful energy. Instead, let's go the other direction. You know, I want to see somebody like totally laid back.
All right,
let's see
Hardy,
A. Sherrod play
Hardy.
Rudy in that scene.
So. that'd be great. However, I'm being told that it is just a Gary DJ project. They will be the two main characters
really?
In every scene, and they will also obviously be needing some small cameos from other friends, but it's a Gary and DJ project. So they will be playing the two lead roles in any of the scenes they do. I need more speaking from Tangway is what I need. I need some really impassioned scenes with Gary Tangway.
That was a good. He's a better actor than that. Like, he could give you more. There's so much more in there to give.
I can't wait to see it, quite frankly.
I would like to see those two of course, social distancing. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull it off. I would like to see the first kiss between Gene Hackman and Barbara Hershey in Hoosiers. He shows up at the farm. Would you like to go for a walk?
Yeah.
You know, they start walking through the field.
There. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that would be a touching scene. I mean, it's
Shawshank?
A sports movie.
Shawshank.
Not
a sports movie.
But
they are playing ball. They're having a catch out on the yard.
Red had a glove, had a three-fingered glove, right? Playing catch.
Right. So, technically, there is some sporting in that one scene.
I'll do Jaws.
Sport fishing.
Tangway could be the mayor of Amity. He'd play that role well. Those beaches will be open. Tomorrow is the 4th of July. You scream Barracuda.
Just start screaming out more. Star Wars!
A. Sherrod would be Darth Vader.
I want to see Gary play a tauntaun, and someone's got to slice him open, and they shove DJ Bean inside to keep him warm while they're on the ice planet.
Tomasi is the tauntaun or an Ewok. Tomasi
DJ won't spill. DJ will not spill what the movie is tomorrow, though. He won't tell me. So we're going to have to wait until tomorrow.
Come on. Give us a hint.
Unbelievable.
Hey, you've got us hooked. Don't take much right now.
Yeah, we'll be back.
We're in.
Well, we got to sit here while they force feed it to us.
Here,
show.
Hold. Let's get one more call in before we go to takeaway. Shane in the work truck's been hanging on. Hi, Shane.
Hello. How you doing, guys? Love
the
show.
What's up? Thank you.
Zoe, and I was a big fan of you when you were a player. So,
nice.
Congratulations on your career. It was awesome. A game that actually I think is probably for the generation wondering how hard it is to move on from a quarterback. Drew Bledsoe's game with against Dan Marino in the 94 opener, and you get to see how awesome two players playing.
Oh.
You probably won't see that type of quarterbacking better ever. The best game ever.
I remember that. We didn't warm up that game. Our warm-up got cut very short because it was a torrential downpour. And the field was still half baseball field, and it was natural grass. And it was just a mud quagmire.
Joe Robbie back then.
Yep. And we were going to throw everybody thinks, okay, it gets nasty, muddy, and rainy. We're going to run it. No, we're going to throw it because there's no pass rush.
Final stats on that game. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Bledsoe, 32 of 51. 51 for 421 yards, four touchdowns, two picks. Marino, 23 of 42 for 473 yards, five touchdowns, one pick. So nine touchdown passes and quite a few passing yards in that game as well. Over 900 yards thrown in that game in 94. Yep. And the funny part about that is, you know, Bledsoe had 51 passing attempts, and the team still rushed more than 20 times. Marion Butts had 15 carries. Leroy Thompson had six carries. Kevin Turner had two. Michael Timpson had one.
Jeez.
Yeah, so there were still 24 carries in addition to the 51 pass attempts. 75 offensive plays right there that I just mentioned. And the final score was 39-35. Was your final. Points!
Over. Take the over.
Points. All right, today's takeaways are coming up next.
They give.
Give it to me. Give it to me now, damn it.
Tell me I'm wrong. I don't know how you could.
And they give.
We need to break news every day.
And they give.
I love breaking news.
Can't get this kind of analysis just anywhere.
And now, it's time to take.
That's not a hot take.
End of the day.
Hot takes from the day.
Today's takeaways with Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Okay, time for today's takeaways brought to you by Awaken When You Need Weight Loss. They will virtually coach you up while you sit there at home. If you're in quarantine, drop the weight. Summer is on its way. Six locations. Check everything out online, and they'll coach you up for life. As I said, awaken180weightloss.com. Free support for life.
To the takeaways we go. When you're on these headsets, you have to be very careful because these are very sensitive mics, and it can sound really bad really quick. really badly. Especially if you put it anywhere in the direct path of your nostrils. You have to be very careful not to do that because you can just be sitting there and all of a sudden you hear this very loud breathing. You're like, what the hell is this? We go through this all the time on the Patriots pre and post when there's guests that aren't used to wearing the headsets. And you're like, dude, pull that away from your face. Well, I had some technical issues here to start the day, and this apparently happened to me, and I want to hear it. How bad was it?
It's because Bill Parcells made it important, and he got the right kind of people, the right type of character guys to come in here and establish his kind of program, drafting guys like Houston, Ty Law, Curtis so Moore, bad. You name it. Let's go down a list of guys. But he wasn't here that long, and the way he departed, people will not forget that. And I understand why he's not in and why people did not vote him in.
And I- And it rumbles, too, man.
There was more. Oh
my God.
I was wondering if you were doing laps before the show.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Zoe.
Yeah.
Being at home, are you more relaxed during the show?
Yes.
Sometimes things slip out because of that, I would say.
Yeah, locker room, more locker room chatter. Yeah.
Like today, a little bit.
God, dang. I love the fact that the league, that they make the league
boy.
Nervous. I love the fact. Keep going. Just got to keep going. And you hope T-Bone got it. And he did.
He did. Good he boy. Got it. He got
you
it.
You just plowed right through that one. Normally, you stop and draw attention to it for 5 minutes.
Oh, but this time, you guys.
No, good job today. No, you're getting good at this, though. You just nice. Whoops.
Just gotta keep going. More. The more you do it, the better you get. The better you get at it. Yeah.
Talking about Richard Seymour today, who is the latest inductee. Well, not inducted yet, but what would you call him right now? What are you between the time of getting voted and going in?
You're the inductee. Yeah,
I guess. Well, he's going into the Patriots Hall of Fame whenever
it hasn't been christened yet. Yeah.
Well, yeah, whenever they're able to do that ceremony, but a good player, and we were talking about him a little bit today.
Yeah, I think the system sort of helped him there, didn't it?
Yeah, he's more of that upfield, you know, push guy instead of, you know, take on the being a two-gap player, and, you know, you've got to swallow two guys while creating lanes for other guys. Where did that come from?
I missed that one when it happened.
I missed it when it came out of my
mouth. I did too. But T-Bone caught it and said, we got a fake promo out of that. And I'm like, we do? Yes, what? Where was the fake promo? There it is.
Talking technique, man.
No, I mean, because that's when we're in the conversation, we know exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
But you pull that out and isolate it, takes on a whole new meaning.
What are you talking about?
Wow. What was that conversation? I thought we were talking football.
Oh. Reentry Monday. Fogger Mass. Reentry Monday.
Oh, yeah. Get ready for it. I know it's coming, so.
I've not heard this from Fogger.
The anti-Richard Seymour stuff. In fact, I got a text, from another member of the Patriots beat that said, Seymour wants next question Felger during a press conference. And that beat writer thinks that's the genesis of it.
Oh, boy.
We're back tomorrow at 10. Enjoy Felger Mads. They're coming your way next. Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code WBZMASS and receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions.
21 years of age or older to wager. Massachusetts only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Play it smart from the start with GameSense. GameSenseMA.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-327-5050 or visit GamblingHelplineMA.org in partnership with MGM Springfield.